Mark Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
It's at the time of the morning where we join our very own Adam Kamda there in a beautiful place called Durban South, Durban North, the Durban Beachfront, the Promenade. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Adam Kamda, Ramadan Mubarak, Ramadan Kareem. How are you doing this fine, beautiful morning?
Wa alaikum salam, Shafaat. Yes, another beautiful morning on the Durban Beachfront. Ramadan Mubarak to you and the listeners. It's a little bit cloudy. The sun is trying to peep through the clouds, but nice crisp air this morning. We can feel the change in season as we come from autumn towards winter. Lots of people in the water. The surfers are out enjoying the waves. The boats are out fishing. There's a competition going on from yesterday to today, the Amslanga Ski Boat Festival. And a few less people walking on the promenade, Shafar. I think all the Muslims are enjoying a relaxing time at home now that they're fasting. A few of them are coming out to walk on the promenade, Shafar.
Yeah, Adam, I'm looking at your composite. It looks beautiful. I can see all the savories and so forth. But I like the caption. It says, Adam Kamda, snook, fries, and sharbat. Couldn't be more apt, Adam.
Yes, Shafaat, I think everyone's focus is on meals and savories and what they're going to have for Seri and Iftar. So everyone's freezers are fully stocked with pies and samosas. I think that's why we've got the chill in the air, Shafaat. Everyone, all the ladies are opening the freezers to check the stock, and then we feel the cold front coming through, Shafaat.
Yeah, Adam, and perhaps, you know, on that note, how was your Seri? What did you have for Seri, Adam?
Oh, we had a magnificent Seri, Shafaat. We usually have banana fry in the morning. That's a lovely dish full of energy, and it's full of fiber, potassium, and it sets you up for the day. And we have lots of leftovers from our Saturday night feast. So we had lots of like veg curries, brinjal curry, dal fry, bhaji. All these things we have with also a staple for us in the morning, Shafaat, is khichdi and mince with yogurt. So we had that, and with the luxury of all the extra curries from leftover from last night, Shafaat.
Alhamdulillah, that is a lovely, mashallah, family really enjoying the seri with style. And alhamdulillah, khichdi with yogurt cooling you down. And are you going to work it out, Adam? Are you going to take your bicycle? Is it a bit too wet to do some cycling?
Yes, Shafaat, sometimes I do a bit of exercise in Ramadan, but sometimes I feel, you know what, I must just take it easy and don't exert myself, because especially at the beginning of Ramadan, Shafaat, you just want your body to get into the rhythm of it. You don't want to overexert yourself. You don't want to, you know, if you go out and do some physical activity and then you battle the rest of the day, you know, you feel a bit dehydrated, you get headaches and stuff like that. So personally, once the first 3 days are over, Shafaat, then I pretty much live a normal life, you know, with all my exercise, fishing, whatever I love to do. But generally, when we start Ramadan, the first 3 days, you focus more on, you know, on the deen and Quran and namazes and stuff, but just avoid more of the physical activities like jogging or cycling, Shafaat.
And I tell you, this weather is absolutely brilliant, and I think we're going to have a cool weather. And this morning, after I fed the chicks and the roosters and the hens, and I got a pond, like, you know, like a cast iron bathtub that I converted into a pond. Hey, overflow. I had to take out some water and so forth. But good, I enjoyed the exercise. And, you know, when winter comes in, you know, actually, Adam, I mean, I'm living right here. You know our spot, right? Spingo Beach. But winter time, the quarantines, the people say, hey, quarantines are biting and fish. There's a frenzy at the shorelines. Is it true that generally in winter there's more bites than the other, you know, the other seasons, Adam?
You know, talking about quarantine, Shafaat, there was one time when people spotted shoals of sardines out at Spingo Beach, and everyone was so excited. It's early in the season, and there was no sardines anywhere else. And I think, I don't know whether they netted them or they sent a boat out or whatever, but they discovered that it was actually a huge shoal of quarantine. They were so abundant, Shafaat, it looked like a shoal of sardines. That's how much of quarantine comes through in our wintertime. And we are so blessed on the coast here, Shafaat. that every month or two, the focus changes. You know, you can target a different species of fish. And I think that is the actual secret and, a little tip of being a successful fisherman, is that don't just go out there and use any general trace and general bait and throw it in and say, I don't know what I'm going to catch. I hope I get lucky today. The talented angler, Shepard, will take the time to learn about which fish are abundant in which season. And then you adapt your trace and your bait and your presentation to target those species of fish. A typical example is the kuta that are biting at the moment, Shafat. My friends and I decided, you know what, let's go and target kuta. So 2 weeks ago, we went out, we followed a routine. We went to a spot called the Kaysons for live baits. Then we went up to Abshlanga. We managed to entice quite a few fish. We hooked quite a few fish, but never really landed any. And then we realized, the rods I was using were too soft. So the following week, that was last week, Saturday, we went out again, Shafat, and we did the same routine, but this time we took better tackle, the stiffer rods. We went to the caissons quite early before sunup, got our live baits into the live well, and then motored up to Abshloti. And even on this trip, Shafat, we were even more equipped with some valuable information from my good friend Jakes from Simply the Best Fishing Charters. He taught us about a structure called a wonky hole that's found in the ocean. And we managed to identify this on our fish finder. We went out there and we had such a wonderful time, Shafat. We hooked and landed three magnificent kuta.
It was really abundance there for Adam catching three. What were the weights of those kuta, Adam?
Those, I'd estimate around 6 to 7 kilos each apart.
Well, that's quite a sizable catch. Looking at the question on the screen for you, it says, Assalamu alaikum, Brother Shafa'at, Ramadan Kareem to you and Adam. I'm really enjoying the chat. I want to know from Adam, when we catch a Cape Snook and when we catch a KZN Snook, are the traces the same? A very good question, Adam.
Shafa'at, they are quite different species. The snook that we get here is the Natal snook, also called the queen mackerel. And the one that you get in Cape Town is the Cape snook. The trace that we use here for our snook is a short wire trace with a fillet of sardine. And sometimes you use a flasher on it. And it's slow trawled along the back line to entice the snook. The trace that they use in Cape Town is you'd fish from a boat, and usually you find all the snook boats congregating in one area where the snook are abundant, and then they send a hand line down with a cutlet of sardine, and they actually measure out the line, by pulling arm's lengths of line, and they count it. And once they get the right spot, the right depth, for example, 20 meters, then they will signal to the other boat, the fish are at 20 meters. Then each of those guys will measure out 20 meters and send that line down, Shafa'at. And there's no, you don't need a sinker, you don't need a rod. It's just a hand line attached to the boat, and you throw it out with a single piece of sardine, Shafa'at, and you can pull them up. And these guys catch, the professional snook anglers in Cape Town, they come back with sometimes 1.5 tons or 2 tons of fish per boat, Shafa'at. So they really, once they get to where the fish are, they really can fill the boat up and come back.
Yeah, and you find these snook, they're all prevalent in every supermarket. And they're nice. I mean, they taste very fresh indeed. Are they really that fresh? Because even if you take the hake when you buy it, they boxed up. But they taste fresh indeed. How they keep it that fresh, Adam?
Yes, Shafa'at, the hake is also caught off Cape Town by the trawlers. And the trawlers are basically a factory at sea. So when the fish is hauled up in the nets, it's sorted out. The bycatch is all thrown back into the ocean and in a way recycled. The creatures of the ocean consume it. But the hake that's kept behind is processed on board. It's cleaned and filleted, packaged and frozen. And when the ship comes back to shore, Shafa'at, they're just offloading cases of ready packed takes. And because it's frozen so quickly, it's, you know, when you are defrosting it or to consume it in your kitchen, it's as if it's basically being defrosted for the first time. And that's the best way to keep a fish fresh. You cannot freeze the fish, defrost it, freeze it again, and then defrost it. It must be frozen once. And then when it's defrosted, it's consumed immediately. And then that's the absolute freshest. And I think the same goes for the Cape snook. Although it's not processed in factories, it's done by the local fisheries. I think they call them the Langanas. These guys, when they come back to shore, they wholesale it to the resellers. The resellers stand on the roadside. And the locals know exactly what time they'll be there. And they all go and buy them up, you know, within a matter of hours, everything bought up. And even these guys can clean the fish for you. So instead of buying a whole snook, they will basically fillet the entire thing, remove the guts, etc. And you can either take it away and consume it for your family, or some of it is smoked shafat. And then this smoked snook is usually frozen and sent out to all the fish shops. A typical example would be somebody like the seafood market in Alpine Road. I know Zach very well, and he often stocks smoked snook. And when you taste that shafat here in Durban, you are getting the taste of exactly what you get in Cape Town. So it's transported in refrigerated trucks and kept absolutely pristine. As you know, for human consumption, they have to take lots of care. And the temperature is usually kept between minus 18 degrees and minus 30 degrees shafat. So, you know, once you thaw it out and consume the fish, it's absolutely fresh as if you caught it yourself.
I tell you, and brilliant information coming through from you. I mean, talking about the trawlers are not just ordinary fishing trawlers. Those are massive factories that are out at sea and immediately processing the package with the label, everything, Adam, with the company's label too.
Yes, Shafa, just as you would see that case of fish that the seafood supplier delivers to you, it comes off the ship exactly like that. In fact, an interesting side thought, Shafa, in terms of these factories that process, I've heard of a ship that leaves China, you know, loaded with cement, Shafa, and it's loose cement that's unpackaged, that's loaded onto the ship. And as the ship travels, it processes it and puts it into bags and has it ready. So when it reaches its destination, they're offloading the properly packaged cement. And I think part of the reason for that is different tariffs for when you're importing loose cement or packaged cement. So they get the benefit of exporting the loose cement. And, you know, but when it arrives at the port, it's completely processed and ready for consumption. And that's the amazing thing to have these factories at sea, Shafat. It's something that, you know, the man in the street never really thinks about.
You know, you also make me think. I was talking to Maulana Salim Karim earlier this week, and he was talking about, he tried to put me in the spot and said, oh, Shafat, you know, tell the people how you catch shad and all that, because I got Adam Kamda use some of your knowledge and some of the information you've given me. But I also thought, you know, since Maulana spoke to me, have, you know, the traces of the shad evolved? Because, you know, fishing technology has gone to another level also. I mean, it's not so much a basic fishing. There's a lot of science that has come in through, Adam. Your comments?
Yes, Shafat, I agree with you. There's always change. There's always technology. There's new information. People are adapting the traces. But I think the shad trace has stood the test of time. There are a few basic options. You could use just a normal shad trace with no float, a single trace or a double trace that you just put in, fill it onto that, and you just lob it out without even a sinker, and it's called a drift bait, drift trace. So if you're fishing over rocky areas and the shad are feeding there, then you can catch them with the drift trace. Or you use the one, it's a similar wire with a hook and a swivel, but using a cork float. So the only thing that's changed there, Shafat, is they used to use corks from the bottling industry that they used to stop the top of a bottle. They use the actual physical cork. That has changed. Some of them use like a foam. But I think this is just due to cost, Shafa. There's not really a technological advancement. I think it was cheaper to use the foam floats rather than the actual wooden cork float Shafaat. And that's basically it. It hasn't really evolved. It hasn't really changed. The style of fishing has remained the same in terms of bait fishing. But what has really become popular now in the fishing scene is for shad Shafaat is to use spoons and artificial lures to try and lure the shad. And that has been quite successful. And there's thousands and thousands of different colors and shapes of those spoon Shafaat. I think that's where you'll see more and more innovation.
Yeah, you know, the other day, your good friend, I was having a chat with Vizy, and, you know, we spoke about the skates, and we noticed a lot of people catch skates, and he was just describing, you know, how the skate is, and like, and I said, you know, in jest, I said, how about, you know, making some skate halim? What's your thoughts on that,
Adam? Yeah, well, Shafa, the skate falls into the class of inedibles. And here in South Africa, generally, the inedibles are like sharks, skates, rays. Those, if they are caught, they are landed just, you know, for the thrill of a heavy fight and the challenge of landing a big fish. And it's usually released. So I've never eaten skate. I don't know if I ever will. So I don't think there's much chance of having a skate in a halim Shafaat.
Okay. We just had a banter there, and I thought, hey, don't give it to me. So give it to the manjras. You know, they'll know what to do about it. You know, the people talk about paya, trotters, halim, and this halim. What's your favorite halim, Adam?
Yes, Shafaat. I normally love a lamb halim. You know, just basic, nicely slow-cooked, and all the lamb pieces, you know, falling apart like you making a mutton niari. So I like just your regular lamb halim with a nice, generous squeeze of lemon and a touch of extra salt, and have that with some buttered naan Shafaat. It's early in the morning. We can't talk about food. Everyone's still full. I think in the evening we must avoid these kind of conversations in case we make people too hungry close to breaking fast Shafaat.
Yeah, you know, people like ideas too, but alhamdulillah, jazakallah for that. Also, you know, we spoke about the skates. What do skates feed on?
Skates, they eat squid, they eat dead fish, you know. If you look at the shape, they're flattened, they live on the bottom of the ocean. They can glide on the bottom of the ocean, and they also can camouflage, away from predators. So they usually suck up whatever, like if there's predators are feeding on a shoal of fish and pieces fall down to the bottom, then these skates consume them. And you know what, talking about predators, Shafaat, I must share with you a very recent video clip that was captured by a local ski boat fisherman off the bluff. They captured a video of two adult orcas and a baby orca hunting a skate. Your talk about the skate reminded me of this video clip, and I thought I must mention it on air. It's available on most of the platforms on Facebook. You should be able to find it on Fishing Durban as well. Look for Fishing Durban on Facebook, or most of the fishing sites have shared it. It's an amazing, amazing shot. I think you see the skate coming up to the surface and almost bumping the boat. I think it was looking for shelter from the orcas. The orcas were hunting it. And these fishermen actually captured the orcas leaping into the air while they attacked this skate. And as gruesome as it looks, Shafaat, it's the law of nature, you know, a fish eats fish. And it was just something, you know, something like you're watching National Geographic, but it's right here in KZN waters, right on our doorstep, captured by the locals and being shared by our locals, Shafaat. And now even spoken about by our locals, Shafaat.
Well done there, Adam. You really document fishing to such an extent that, you know, the tourism, Durban tourism, they're looking for you. And, you know, talking about skate and we're talking about stingrays, what's the difference?
They are from the same family, Shafaat. I must admit, I don't know technically exactly the difference. But this going by the name, Shafaat, I'm assuming the stingrays are more a little more dangerous. You know, you just got to be careful of that sting in the tail. Often you see the fishermen handling these fish, taking photos, and then taking them, leading them back to the water. You need to educate yourself to understand how to handle them and avoid injuring yourself by getting stung by these stingrays, Shafaat.
Yeah, this question says, Assalamu alaikum, Adam and Shafaat, a very lively conversation. I want to know how young can kids start off fishing? What is the youngest age you can put them on the rod? Good question there, Adam.
Shafaat, as long as they can hold something, if you hold your finger to a little kid and he can grip your finger, I think he's old enough to start fishing, Shafaat. I think I started fishing when I was like around 3 years old. So as long as the kid can walk around and understand a few basic instructions and can observe and see what's going on and understand the thrill of catching a fish, start them off as young as possible. Take them out from being a baby. Take them to the beach. So you let them enjoy the outdoors with you and groom them. And as soon as they can, they start walking, Shafaat, I think you can put them onto a fish. I've seen recently, Shafaat, fathers taking the kids out on these kayaks, on these paddle skis, and it is such an amazing sight to see this father and son team go out and catch these huge barracuda. And the kids look like they're like 5 or 6 years old, Shafaat, wearing a life jacket under the care of the father. It's just so amazing. I mean, it's a challenge itself, paddling through the ocean, paddling through the waves, and then beaching your kayak, coming back through the waves. But besides that, being out in the ocean and hooking a kuta and letting your son hook that kuta and land it himself, one of these guys is a good friend and customer of mine. His name is John O'Grant. You can find him on Facebook as well. Search for John O'Grant or look at the paddle ski clubs. I often use photos from two very big paddle ski clubs in Durban, the North Coast Kayak Fishing Club and the Amgeni Kayak Fishing Club. You can look them up as well, Shafaat. They're full of wonderful photos of catches. And top of the prize for me, Shafaat, is those ones with the father and son teams going out and having a successful day. The other notable character is Sean Elliott. He and his son, Finn, also have a wonderful time and post some amazing photographs.
Absolutely, Adam. And I was also thinking, you know, when we were growing up, most of the young boys, they started off with the bamboo rods. And then as it evolved, when we went to these big supermarkets or these big stores, and then they used to have special kits for, you know, lighties at that time. And how many must have bought that? And I know I used to try it out, go to the river mouth and catch a lot of pinkies with that. Talk to us about that, Adam.
Yes, Shafaat, we've evolved from the bamboo rods and we went to fiberglass rods and then it moved on to graphite rods, Shafaat. And with the graphite rods, they're much lighter, much more responsive, but you have to take care of them because they are more brittle. They're not as hardy as the fiberglass rods. But having said that, Shafaat, although the expense has gone quite high, but fishing is still very accessible to everyone. In my shop, for example, we've got graphite rods, a starter rod, a rod, reel, and line for around 250 rand. So you can get very, very cheap combos to enjoy for light fishing, like estuary fishing and bass fishing. And then you can move up to your general combos, and you can target shad and even up to shad, stumpies, blacktails, etc., even up to maybe even hooking a small garrick on those combos. And those ones for the surf will range from about 500 to 600 rand, Shafaat. So it's still a very accessible sport. You can, the entry level is very low. And as you grow into it and as you learn to love it and you want to spend more on your passion, you can start to learn the different, the difference between what more are you getting for the expensive tackle compared to the cheaper tackle, and keep upgrading, Shafaat, and move to the top of your game, Shafaat.
So in other words, if I want to catch the Natal snook, I'll have to buy in the range of 800 to 900 rand rod and a tackle and so forth, Adam?
Yes, that will get you going quite easily to catch Natal snook from the shore. You can do spinning from the shore. Or if you're fortunate to be on a boat, then you can use tackle. The tackle is not so technical. You know, you're just trawling off the back of the boat. You can use fairly general tackle for fishing from the boat. But from the shore, Shafaat, that's where the difference comes in, using a very high quality reel and using the top range of the rod and the best braid. You can get that distance that you're casting quite easily beyond the back line and get your spoon out there and get stuck into the fish, Shafaat. But having said that, even if you're not spending 3,000 to 4,000 rand on your on your top end tackle, even 1,000 or 1,500 rand tackle. You know, you are fishing. As long as you've got a line in the water, Shafat, you're fishing. So that extra money just gives you a little bit of an edge, but a lot of the talented anglers, even with the lower end tackle, are producing some amazing fish, Shafat.
Now, Adam, how would you describe fishing, a way of life or a hobby?
It's like any sport, Shafat. You know, take cycling, for example. You can buy a bicycle for 1,500 rand, get you cycling. You can cycle casually along the promenade. Or you could up the game and upgrade to a 50,000 rand bicycle, and you could be entering races like in Cape Town and flying all over the place. So you need special, when you're booking your flight, you got to book your space for your bicycle as well. And it becomes a lifestyle, Shafat. So the same thing is with fishing. You could casually go, you know, to the shore with your friends who love fishing and just mess about and fish, you know, not really so seriously. Or you could up your game and start entering competitions. And then, you know, you understand all the different styles of fishing, types of tackle. And you want the absolute best to give you that edge to, you know, to compete with each other. And then even following the different seasons, as I said, Shafat, you know, you'd have different sets of tackle for your summer, winter, spring, etc., and targeting all manner of species. And for me, Shafat, the real joy is actually to bring some fresh fish for the pot. You know, if I bring back some fish for the weekend, I'll usually take it to my fish shop, get it professionally sliced up and put in trays. And then I dish them out to the family, Shafat, like it's the Bakri Eid. And, you know, you have this thrill that, you know, to be able to share your catch with everyone and have a few words, how we caught it, etc. And then if you're planning, like, for example, dal and rice, you know you've got that pack of a few fillets of kuta there to fry up with the dal and rice, Shafat. It's really, for me, it's really rewarding to be providing. It's almost like, you know, that hunter-gatherer experience, that primeval way of you know, provisioning for your family to go out and hunt the food yourself. So, you know, catch the fish, get it nicely clean and packed, and then, feed the entire family with it, Shafat.
When you talk, we can just go on chatting because it's like we're having a fishing conversation. But you have to give us a recipe, but for iftar. What's our iftar recipe for this afternoon when we break past, Adam?
Iftar is a bit complicated, Shafat. I'll prepare something for the next show. But what I want to share with you is the banana fry recipe, Shafat, that we usually have for Seri. And it's such a simple recipe, Shafat. Even if you don't have a clue of how to cook, you start off with 1 tablespoon of ghee in your frying pan. You warm it up. In the meantime, you slice up 3 bananas. You add the bananas to the ghee and just fry it up on medium heat. You sprinkle about 1/2 tablespoon of sugar over that, and the sugar actually melts and removes some of the liquid from the banana fry. Then you get this lovely syrupy consistency. And just before serving, you sprinkle it with some cinnamon powder and a touch of ilachi powder. Serve it hot and have it with buttered naan or even with crispy toast, Shafat. Absolutely delicious, very nourishing, and keeps you full for most of the day, Shafat.
I tell you, I like that. I really like it, Adam. And, I'll keep you going and I'll keep you fit and strong as always because you're an asset to the Ummah also. And I must thank you very much from the bottom of our hearts for gracing the platforms of Marcus Sahaba, the voice of the Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. Your parting words before we let you go.
Yes, Shafat, I'd just love to wish everyone Ramzan Mubarak again and remember us in your duas. It's so sad for so many of us who've lost loved ones. I'll make special dua for all those who have passed. Allah grant them higher stages of Jannat. And as I said, remember us in your duas that we all have good health for this Ramzan and we see it to the end and Allah blesses us with the opportunity to have a full 30 fast this Ramzan. Assalamu alaikum, you and the listeners.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As Adam said, I make a dua for all the marhums that are made a parda from this dunya. May Allah give them the highest stages of Jannah. Jannatul Firdaus. Ameen. Summa ameen.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah.